Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hey, what's going on?
Ryan Brushwood.
Man, you were missed. We missed you. All of the Weird Things gang got together and we were like, where's Andrew?
Andrew didn't get invited.
Oh, probably should have invited you. Yeah. that would have been a good way to have you there.
Yeah, hey, you know, didn't know. Bryce Castillo.
Hi, I'm the producer of the show. I speak in the show a little bit. I was also at the thing.
Yeah, I know. That's why you're just Bryce Castillo now.
Also, let's pretend that inviting Andrew to the conference would have mattered in terms of Andrew attending the conference.
Where was this conference? San Jose?
A thought experiment. If we had suggested that you come up to San Jose for TwitchCon, do you think you would have come?
That's actually within my realm of, hey, I can hop in my car and go. That actually is in my, it's highly possible, but.
Holy cow. Oh, wow. Yeah, that's crazy.
Because if it's a last minute, I don't need to get a plane ticket, whatever, do that. Justin's giving me this sort of, look, I can name you several cons I've showed up. Salt Lake, MizCon, I did the
let's do this
Colorado one. Several of these things I do go show up at.
I've
driven down to Anaheim for one.
None of this is interesting for anybody listening. But I look forward to the next time that we can all plan on going to a con together.
I say let's save TwitchCon discussion for after things, because I think there's a lot of
You don't want to talk about it for another hour here?
Well, I mean, I do, just, you know, an hour from now, I want to talk about it for an hour.
Yeah. No, we can talk about that. I mean, again, I'm for our audio listeners, don't worry, I'm not angry at them. I'm just used to this by now. Let's go jump into the stories. If I can see the screen without through my tears. You know, something we talked about before was the idea of, like, how do we get to, like, self-driving cars becoming kind of the norm? And one of the things we talk about here is the idea of, like, you know, when you're driving, like, I've got the Model 3 with the autopilot, which is amazing. And so other cars have these features too. I'm just going to talk about what I know. You go into this, you click into the feature, and all of a sudden it steers itself. It'll do lane changes if you want it to, maintains the right speed, all that, and, you know, warns you when cars have stopped ahead. It stops by itself and it does that, and it allows for a different kind of driving. It's a very, very different kind of driving, and you can see a few years down the road when we have much better self-navigation, everything else in cars, how that becomes the norm for everything. One of the things we've talked about is the idea that, like, well, people are like, I'm not going to give up my gas-powered car. Like, maybe not, but if you have an electric car, you can go faster, safer. You know, if it's self-driving cars are theoretically safer at higher speeds. Australia is now passing a law that says that in certain highways, Australia is really big. Don't know if you know this. They have highways that are ridiculously long with nothing in between, but they're in the process of passing legislation that says, hey, if you're in, like, a fully electric car, like a Tesla or like Chevy Bolt or whatever one of these other cars is, you can go 20 miles an hour faster than any other car.
Wow.
Wait.
Oh, so you could maximize your battery charge and there's less likely that you could run out of battery in a place where it's long stretches and hostile? Or?
Well, it's not necessarily about the battery life as much as incentivizing people to use electric. They're trying to move people towards more electric. And one of the ways that they're looking at doing that is saying, yeah, you want, you know, get an electric car, go 20 miles an hour faster.
So is the benefit just what? Is it the safety side, or is it the environmentally friendly side, or is it the what is it they're incentivizing by doing that?
I I think the primary incentivization is the environmental. I think their primary goal is to switch over to decarbonize, is to move towards. And oh. Australia put in place, I think, the largest battery pack, one of the Tesla battery packs in there is out there. They're big, you know, power systems. They're trying to do a lot to go solar and trying to, in the battery packs, would have, you know, solar power at night. They're trying to incentivize this.
So I know that the federal 55 mile an hour speed limit that was instituted under the Reagan administration was done so partly or ostensibly to alleviate the gas crisis, right? So
was that under Reagan that was put in place?
I know it was overruled by Reagan. I believe Reagan is the one that instituted it, and then he vetoed it when they tried to get rid of it. And then it was one of the first times I'd ever seen a congressional override. Is that what they call it? Or overruled, or two-thirds majority? But if, and in that case, it was a national security problem in that we can't be dependent on an energy source that is owned by a cartel on the other side of the planet. And so we will institute everybody go slower so that we can, you know, whether or not it's effective, at least the intention appeared to be, so that we can use less fuel. But if you're looking at renewables, if you're looking at, you know, nuclear powered cars, essentially, because once it, you know, who cares what charges the battery as long as you can grow it at home, then it kind of does make sense to say now all of a sudden the new game is not to think of it in terms of security risks or national security, but instead just in terms of safety. And if you can prove that it's just as safe to go 75 miles an hour as it is to go 55 miles an hour, then it really does seem like there's no reason not to.
Yeah.
The National Emergency Highway Energy Conservation Act was signed into law January 2nd, 1974 by Richard Nixon.
Oh, shoot. Nixon. Wow.
Well, wouldn't been
that was the national. Oh, sorry. That was the maximum speed limit law. The uniform speed limit was signed into law on became effective 60 days later by requiring the limit as a condition of each state receiving highway funds.
Which is also how they were able to nationwide eventually force the drinking age to 21, is by withholding federal funds for highways. I remember one of the holdouts was, I remember being 19, 20 years old and driving in the car for 10 hours to get to New Orleans. And then just so I could be like, look at me, I'm buying a beer. I don't like beer very much.
Yeah. It's, you know, one of the many interesting ways in which, you know, federal government exerts its authority or be able to do that by controlling funding. So much of everything is decided by that. But it is, you know, it's interesting. And it's funny just to hear that we talked about, like, what if, you know, it's not so much that you tell everybody, oh, no, you've got to go to this, but you just start conferring advantages. We have HOV lanes that also let you do electric. And now here you have, you know, if you have an electric, go 20. And I think with self-driving, it's like they've talked about converting bus lanes and other stuff. I think it's fast becoming a reality that I think that if you have a car that's safer at higher speeds, and if that reduces congestion in theory, then sounds good to me.
So I guess I've always been kind of curious about those laws. In that, like, if it's safe, if the government is deeming that it is safe to go 20 miles faster than they had previously allowed, if you have an electric vehicle, like, it is just, I mean, I guess it's like, oh, no, we were just being extra cautious before when we said that it was only 55. You can really go 75, but only if you're a good boy who reduces carbon emissions.
So here's a weird sideways twist on this. It is something that I was told, you know, around the time that they removed the federal regulations and all of a sudden states could decide all their own speed limits. The story I was told is that Texas had a law that said the speed limit has to be what the majority of vehicles are doing anyway. And so in a case where whether it's labeled 55 or not, if it's the middle of the desert and clearly, you know, you've got those gizmos that you go fuff up and then counts how fast you're going and radar tracking or whatever. It's not hard to figure out how fast in general people are going, then and instead move the speed limit to that to reflect that. I mean, I remember it being shocking the first time that it's like, you know, first 65, then 70, then they raise it to 75. And then the first time I saw 80, I thought that was crazy. And then I got out to West Texas, where it is the desert. 85 miles an hour is the speed limit. And then in a separate journey, you had the fact that there was this federal requirement of the 55 mile an hour speed limit, but you had Montana, and Montana, of course, you know, big, wide open, you know, there's no reason to go 55 miles an hour. So what they did is they, as a middle finger to the federal government, they said, okay, if you get caught speeding, you're going to get pulled over and you're going to be charged the maximum fine of $5, which you must pay on the spot. And then, so I don't know. It's interesting. I don't know how much of that is accurate or true.
You know, you get different, being pulled in different directions, you know, and like we had, you know, the mileage, you know, speed limits were changed because of, oh, we need to conserve gas. And there is data that showed that there were like more accidents and stuff like this, that it was safer to go faster and whatnot. And those competing sorts of things of like, you know, it's like there are people who pushed, you know, want us all to use public transit, you know, which sounds neat on one aspect, but when it's, you know, 1 a.m. and you don't have any baby formula, you know, and you don't have a car and you live in a city where everybody tells you just take the bus, it's not a helpful solution, you know. And that's that the ability for individuals to have the right to travel where they want, how they want, individually, whatever, is important to me, but other people it's not. And, you know, there are arguments pro and against, but, you know,
well, I think look, if it works, like that's to me is the biggest end all be all. There are some places where public transportation is really rad and it's really good and it's really efficient and people then use it a lot. And then there's places where it's a relic to, you know, it's basically that old, you know, that the gym membership card for the city that, you know, they went to once and now just sits being beaten and weathered in the bottom of their wallet because it's like, you know, it'd be better if we did it. It'd be really better if we went to the gym, but we don't. So there's that.
Yeah.
J.C. Calhoun points out there was a brief moment that Montana literally had no speed limit. It said safe and reasonable. Speed limit, safe and reasonable.
Well, I'd say, you know, I've been in places where I could go out faster. I'm like, nah, I'm okay. I'm good. I'm at the speed that I want to be at. You know.
Yeah, that's the funny part is, I don't want to jinx it, but it feels like everybody's getting smarter about setting speed limits because I drive what feels right most of the time, and then every so often you see a cop off to the side, and you're like, oh, am I speeding? And you look, you're like, no, I'm doing exactly the speed limit, give or take 3 or 4 miles an hour, right? So I think they're just getting better at setting appropriate stuff.
Yeah. More data. Yeah.
I do, like, that is just an element that is, as somebody who used to drive a lot when I would go back and forth between, like, Fort Lauderdale and Syracuse, like, it was always just like, all right, there's the speed of traffic, and then that's usually above the speed limit on some level, and then there's like, okay, I don't know, it just always seems so nebulous. It's like they're one of like the weirdest kinds of laws because it's like, I'm not sure if I'm breaking it. Like, all things being equal, I would like.
And you've seen like those prank videos where three teenagers or early 20 somethings want to, I don't know if they're trying to just make a point or whatever, but they get in a line and then they all slow down to 55 miles an hour, and it's like the apocalypse. Like, just it's Alderaan exploding only with rage instead of fear. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah. In other news, speaking of speed, things that go fast, SpaceX has confirmed that their the McGregor test site, I believe that's the location, that they have begun groundbreaking and putting in the equipment for starting the test for the BFR rocket. They've put in a bunch of tanks to be able to hold like liquid methane and liquid oxygen, which is going to be the fuel, the oxidizer that they're going to be using for this. And they're still on target, hoping to begin hop testing in late next year. So, you know, they've got, you know, shovels moving, things put into place. They're taking this very, very seriously. And one of the things we had heard from Musk previously was that the Block 5, which is the Block 5 Falcon 9, which is the latest iteration of it, which was the one built with everything they learned about reusability, you know, once they were satisfied with that, they'd be shifting primarily into BFR production. Well, we've had a Block 5 launch twice now, and it looks like we're going to have a Block 5 maybe go for a third launch, maybe by the end of the year, the third time they'll reuse this. And so, you know, if they feel like this design is what it's supposed to be, then, you know, we're going to see SpaceX, you know, moving forward to it. They just applied for, you know, SEC approval, I think, was to do like, you know, $500 million in borrowing for their initiatives, primarily attached to BFR and Starlink. So
SpaceX is a private company for now, right?
Yep.
Do you think they'll ever go public?
You know, given Elon Musk's opinions on publicly held companies.
And by the way, holy smokes. Considering what has happened with Saudi Arabia, probably a good no call not to take the company private with Saudi Arabian money, huh? Like that was a.
You're talking about with the Tesla thing.
Yeah. No, Elon, yeah, that was a very like the whole funding secured thing was tied on some level to the, the Arabian wealth fund. Whew, good call.
Yeah, the timing's not so good on that, and it's, you know, it's. I'm going to attach them, but it is interesting to see people criticizing one source of funding while being completely quiet about other sources from governments that are equally questionable. it's just like, I think that in the foreseeable future, like Elon has said that the reason Elon, because, you know, first name basis, he said that he wants to avoid making SpaceX a public company, because once you have a public company, you have shareholders and people like that that can be like, why are we going to Mars? It's not cost effective, you know, and it's valid, you know, but he says, as long as it's private, we can say, hey, yeah, we're going to spend a ton of money trying. This is the goal. The company exists to do this thing. Once you're a public company, your goal is to return shareholder value.
Yeah. And that does change things, especially when, what was it, Pendulet? I'm sure he borrowed the quote from somebody else, but he says, you don't need freedom to do the smart thing. You need freedom to do the crazy thing. And so far, we've gotten to see Elon Musk do a lot of crazy things because it's his crazy gamble to take, right? And, you know, once you allow people to buy in and you become publicly held, you have to do what the public says, which is, I would imagine, part of why Elon's a bit frustrated and talking about taking, you know, or well, his intention to take it Tesla private again.
His big frustration is that there are the short sellers. There are the vultures that want to see, like, Tesla specifically fail, because traditionally, betting against an upstart American car company has been a very, very, very safe bet, right? There's a reason why we haven't seen a company like Tesla explode in decades on decades on decades in this country. So all the media and PR and everything that goes into making sure that that happens, I think, creates a environment that Elon Musk is not a fan of, and you know, cost him $20 million because he, wanted to, you know, splash the waters a bit.
I guess. I can picture it, though. Once it's as boring as UPS, once, like, they clearly won and it's like, hey, man, do you need something? You know, when you are at a humdrum, like, I'm going to buy a ticket for my grandma to go to Mars. Like, once it's a commodity item and everything is established, I could totally see them, because UPS was not, I remember they were one of the surprising IPOs that was one of the biggest winners of the dot-com bubble, because everybody was buying stuff online, and UPS was not an online company. But when it came to getting all the stuff you were buying online, there's only, what, three players in town, you know, Postal Service, FedEx, or UPS. And so when UPS went public, all of a sudden, by virtue of just waiting long enough, they had one of the biggest IPOs in history. I just made up.
Well, yeah, we get your point. And I don't know to say that you're wrong. So I think once they once they've built, hey, we're here going to Earth to Mars, we're doing this sort of stuff. And then, you go IPO for a couple of reasons. One is if you want to cash out, you just want to cash out on it. Two is because if you want to do a radical capital, way to do it. There are other ways SpaceX can raise capital. They can borrow money now. They could create a ancillary company that has a publicly held company that has basically leased all of their craft to be able to do the Mars and loop. There's a lot of ways to do it. So we'll see. One thing that's been interesting too is remember the Falcon Heavy launch where they launched, in test launches use dummy payloads, generally concrete blocks. Elon put his own personal roadster on there and we gave us these amazing, shots and all that of it. Because of that launch, because they showed in order to do that, to put that into, a trajectory that intersect Mars orbit, they had to do an extended long burn, which meant let the rocket shut down for a period of time and then turn the engines back on to go do this. Because they did that, they've now got at least two new corporate clients that want to use Falcon Heavy launches now because of that. And people have disregarded, like, oh, it's a PR stunt. Like, no, it was technical. There was a technical reason why they did this. And now we're seeing this because now companies said, well, because you're able to do that long burn stage, whatever, we want to, buy a Falcon Heavy launch. So, it's space, man.
Hey, by the way, Starman, the one shot that we're paused on right now on this video here, we've talked about this before, like low Earth orbit, where the International Space Station is. Starman and the Tesla have gotten a view that no human has experienced in my lifetime. We've talked about this before. Because we stopped going to the moon before I was born, that means, when you are in the International Space Station, the view of Earth you have is the equivalent of holding a basketball up to the side of your face. It's not the same as being able to take in, it's amazing big blue marbleness. So his car got a better view of the Earth than any person alive during my lifetime.
and therefore so did we via Skype.
Speaking of a better experience than anybody's ever had before, that may not qualify as weird things, but we'd like to think it's an experience, and each episode's a new one you haven't had before. In order to keep making this experience happen.
I'm picking it up. Yeah, man. Guess what? You know what's a weird experience? Giving money to independent podcasters. Not only does it give you a weird feeling in your belly that I'm told is called pride, it also causes the future to change. Whereas in the past, the show had been sporadic, would go on extended hiatuses, come and go, and not really be around. But then one day, the patrons arrived. Ancient wizards who have credit cards and said, cause weird things to appear every week in my feed and double my amusement by creating a companion show called After Things. However, I do not want to wait for both of them to appear in my feed on different days. I want them both together. Create a class, cast spell, Patronicus, and then now I have a single feed just for myself and all the weird things arriving on the regs.
Zach. Patreon.com/weirdthings. Support the show. Thank you.
All this talk about space, and I know a lot of people are going, this is great. How do I book my tickets?
Ticketmaster. Snakes. The answer is snakes.
How about
is there like a link in the SpaceX Instagram bio?
Wait a minute, hold on, Justin, real quick, side bet. I know we've been betting all weekend, but $1 side bet. True or false, has a snake gone to space?
Oh man,
I bet you $1. I'll take either side.
I, at some point, there's got to be some experiment on like the International Space Station or something that
that's the nope mission.
Snakes on a station.
Well, they probably,
nope.
I know bees have gone to space because we wanted to see what shape of honeycomb they would do. But why would you take a snake into space?
science. It's not going to turn into a dragon.
Okay, but like we know for sure, I assume there's been no bears in space. I guess
the question would be, has there been a, well, I guess there was a dog, right?
Right? That was Laika was the first. Also, Laika died in space.
Has a cat gone to space?
Oh. Okay, second action. I'll take both bets. Give me a bet on snakes, and then give me a bet
on
cats.
No, you're going to say no on cat and no on snake.
I'll take whichever one you want. If you say yes to both, yeah. In fact, that sounds great. I'll take no on both.
No on both. Because that to me, my thought would be, at some point, if there was ever a cat or a dog that went up for science, like in the last like 20 years, then it's more likely that a snake would go for whatever, you know, for scientific observation.
Oh, you know what? Third bet. This is now a $3 operation. So first of all, yes, no on snake and cat, and then and you got to pick which one got first, if one of them had or if both had.
Oh, put them in order. Oh, I think it would be cat snake.
Cat snake. I'll take the opposite on all of those. So you're saying, yes, there was a cat. Yes, there was a snake. Well, and
you're saying that there is no. So you're saying that even if I beat you on the first two, then your only way to get action back is if I sequenced it incorrectly.
Oh, no. Like, I'm taking all right, three
move
bets.
On. Just.
Come on, guys.
All right. Reveal the answers.
So from my very quick research, I do not believe a snake has been sent into space.
You do?
I do not.
Oh.
I think there was not a snake sent into space.
So that's one for me.
That's one for you.
Felicette was the first cat to have been launched into space. She was launched in October 18th.
Which means by default, that means you're also the winner
Don't
of the
say
third.
Who yet. You got to guess.
This cat is the only cat to have survived a space flight. The second one did not.
Yeah, all right. So I owe you $1.
What country put a cat, murdered a cat in space? The first.
I mean, it's got to be.
Felicette survived. Second cat died. What country murdered a cat in space?
Oh, it was us, wasn't it? Russia is the clubhouse favorite,
no,
right?
Russia would have gotten there first, and then it would have been U.S. playing follow-up, and we would have let a cat burn up. Is that what happened?
So you think it was us? Your vote is the United States. You know, like who are the culprits?
Look, man, I saw the movie.
The United States, Russia, China, maybe?
I saw the movie First Cat, and I know enough to be afraid that it's the United States.
Oh, this is horrible. So the answer is the French.
Oh, that's wonderful. I
Way
feel
off the board.
Not guilty.
Way off the board.
Yeah, but so Felicette, this cat, like they even have like a commemorative of like if you go there, you can see this nice little like 8x10 of the cat with a little paw print. It's adorable.
Of
course, the mission was a suborbital flight, which meant it went into space but it didn't go into orbit. 5 minutes of weightlessness. Felicette was recovered safely after the capsule parachuted Earth. She was euthanized 3 months later so that scientists could examine her brain.
Oh, Jesus.
She was found on the streets of Paris and launched into space and then murdered for science.
It's better.
The French.
We had to save the cat by killing it.
Yeah.
It really did murder a cat. Wow.
Did they find anything cool?
What do you think?
Hey, it's a cat brain. Hey, look. You're not going to find anything after 5 minutes in weightlessness. You didn't need, you know, we didn't need 50 years of space science after the fact to know that.
Yeah. You might as well just have a cat that went bungee jumping 7 times and then, and then kill that cat. And you get pretty much the same thing.
Yeah. Sad. but if you wanted to go into space, you know, how about an app? There's a company called Shuttle, which is creating an app that will make it easy to book your ticket to go into space.
So are they just like really, really, really early in the game? They're just really wanting to establish mind share. So they'll be like, no flights listed until there are flights listed.
Yeah, you know, I think that's kind of, you know, the goal. You know? I think they're, you know, like, look, let's get in on a space thing. And so we'll, you know, Mars we'll put an app so you can buy it.
I mean, yes, all of this is putting carts before horses. But if Mars One can do that for a reality programming show based on being on Mars, then these guys most certainly can do.
That was a grift.
Booking thing.
Like, that was just an out and out like magic beans thing. I
mean, they're still around. They're still doing PR stuff, and they appear to be, in the interviews that I've seen, fairly level headed about like, yes, we know this is very far out. And we know that yes to all the reasons to naysay everything, but like they're not gone. They're still around and doing interviews and all that stuff.
Well, I mean,
I'm just saying the use of the past tense maybe shouldn't apply.
I mean, weren't they like charging so you could submit your thing?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know about that.
Or, yeah, you had to pay to be able to apply, and they had this sort of thing that was doing it. I mean, they've not a lot has come out of them because I know there was a lot of shakeups there and a lot of criticism there. So I don't know what they've been up to recently.
It feels to me like basically until such time as it's possible to book passage to Mars, they're pretty much running a Mars fantasy camp, basically. And if you want to buy into fantasy camp and, you know, go through fantasy training so that someday you can fantasy go to Mars, they're happy to help you out. And, but I guess, I mean, they are still around though, right?
I don't know what around means, you know, if they're still a company kind of thing. Are they actively doing on anything? I don't know.
I know as recently as 2 or 3 months ago, there was a panel discussion on some podcast and like one of the three people was a representative from Mars One. Unless something has happened in the last 3 months or so, then they're not.
Well,
gone.
But I mean, does that mean that they're funded? I mean, they have somebody like, hey, we have a domain name and I have this domain. I don't think they like vanished, you know, but I'm like, I don't know that they raised enough funding to really have. I've heard a lot of controversial stuff about the status of it. But I guess I am
more likely to say like, all right, this seems like an over aggressive but plausible business model that, knowing what we know about the size of the air travel industry, if you knew 10 years before commercial air travel was going to be a thing, that you could make the world's first hub to buy tickets on airplanes, that would seem to be a good bet, if maybe a little early, right? Whereas Mars One is something where it's like, that just seems like they might as well be selling, like, do you want to live past the Stargate? We're doing a reality show past the Stargate, and you can be on it if you pay us $50 to send in your tape.
Yeah, I'm enthusiastic about space overall, and I think that there are people who want to do similar things. Some I consider more credible than others. Them, I don't. But, you know, the company that's doing Shuttle, one of the things they're doing, which is cool, is apparently on the app, you'll be able to book one of those zero gravity flights. So you'll be able to book a parabolic flight. They have like, you know, they have like 34 seats and they'll be able to do that. So, I mean, that's cool. That's a way of saying, hey, until then, we can do this other kind of thing. And then once Virgin Galactic and once, you know, in theory, you know, we keep saying this for the last 4 years, you know, any day now they're going to start announcing, you know, private passenger flights or something. But, you know, it's a sign of ambition. And, you know, another one, I sent another link to Bryce, which is there's another startup, we've made mention before, that wants to build a space hotel, the Aurora. They have this, you know, I think the Orion or whatever, you know, they've got funding. They just got, I think, I had a really nice seed round of funding. They've got this space station they want to build. They're still, you know, pushing the whole tourism model, which I guess might be kind of an easier way to sort of sell early versus where I think the real value is going to be in research. You know, in Bigelow Aerospace, which has their own hotel / research station, they've got, you know, they've booked a Falcon 9 flight, you know, at some point to be able to launch. So, no, it's, you know, and we'll see, you know,
I don't think that it's going to be a weird situation where people are booking flights to access some level of space within the next 5 years. Like,
yeah, and I would love to see something along the same lines as Mars One, in some sense of like a citizens Mars thing, like a National Geographic Mars Geographic or something. I just, everything, the way they went about doing it just was shady to me, you know. But
yeah,
you know, by all means, you keep dreaming. You know, speaking about dreaming, you know, you've got an app to book your trip to space. You've got companies like SpaceX, and we can't forget Blue Origin, which is now funded by the richest man in the world, who's, if not gonna, he just talked more about it. This man's mission. You know, Jeff Bezos' mission is same thing Elon Musk is doing, fully reusable access to space and building space stations and stuff. So the richest man in the world wants to build space stations and space habitats and all that, and has a company that, you know, Blue Origin's bidding contracts and extremely well funded, has access to more funding than SpaceX does. He's serious about this. So it's, you know, funny, you know, we're going to access to space, and now there comes a company that wants to make it possible to have babies in space.
Okay.
Like deliver babies or impregnate people or do in vitro zero G fertilization?
All of the above, Brian. Yes, yes, and yes.
All right.
So this company, was it like Space Life Origin? They have a thing called their first goal is to, first they want to like preserve human DNA by putting it into orbit around the Earth. That sounds safe. Because, you know.
Yeah, just expose it to cosmic rays.
DNA,
yeah.
Nothing bad can go wrong there. And then what they want to do after that is apparently they want to, they want to do an IVF in space.
I mean, that seems like, I mean, first of all, that all has to be animal experimentation first, right? Like, it would be straight up unethical to do an IVF just to, like, what if we did an IVF, just a barely accepted in the last 20 years procedure? What if we did that in a highly radiological environment with a human?
Oh, Brian, you and your negativity and your... killing the dream.
My god, 2024. You're telling me in 7 years or 5 years, what, 6 years? It's 2018 right now. 6 years, we're going to have a baby in space? Boo. No.
A baby born in space. To be clear, because people can't see this. 2021, they're saying conception in space, birth on Earth. And then 2024, the first baby born in space.
Hold on. Actually, now I'm believing all this. I mean, because I guarantee you people have already been doing it in space. And then now, you know, so
who's doing it in space?
They're just doing it on the. There was one shuttle mission where newlyweds of the 7 crew members, 2 of them were newlyweds. You tell me whether or not there's been space boning going on.
Wait, is that like known?
Known that they got married in the weeks before their mission to space, where they served in a 7-member crew on the space shuttle space.
I'm not questioning the horniness of newlyweds, Brian. I'm just asking whether or not they've said or hinted at.
They've not spoken publicly on the record. I'm sure that NASA, NASA expressed.
So that is that frowned upon?
Officially, there was no discussion about there's number 1 and number 2, and we don't talk about any other numbers in space.
So there is no, like, I mean, if you just Google, has
I mean that's as far as publicly stated on the record things, there is no confirmation of anybody who's been having relations in space. But like that case alone, like I maybe we exist in a timeline where they got married and didn't have sex in space, but if so, I want off this timeline. I would rather not be in this universe than believe that they didn't do it up there.
Okay, wait. Apparently there have been several attempts at having sex in space.
Attempts.
In February 2013, Dennis Tito's Inspiration Mars Foundation announced that they were going to send a 2-person crew on a 501-day free return flyby mission to Mars and back. All right, well, that didn't happen. Then in June 2015, Pornhub announced that its plans to make the first pornographic film in space. I don't know.
Yeah, I think the odds are better, as Drunk Furball in the chat is saying, I think the odds are better that Sinbad made a genie movie than in this timeline than people, newlyweds did not have sex on the space shuttle.
Well, I guess my I do love that that is your North Star on this. There is no way that the power of newlywed horniness could be reined in by anything, not even a mission to space where they have no privacy, that they would be banging, they would find a way to bang. Again, and now we get into a very high-minded version of the high school or middle school conversation on what counts and what doesn't, right?
Which base, bases and spaces?
yeah. Which space base did you get to?
Which space base?
yes, like the crew sleeps and there are bunks. I understood. I'm just saying it would probably be a bit of a spectacle. This isn't exactly just slipping into the the broom closet, for a quickie. Nor is it like the several miles high club. You'd have to. There would be some manner of trying to figure it out, right?
I don't think so. Let me put it this way. Let's say the four of us were in a spaceship, and there's two other people, and they just were newlyweds. I would say, Justin, Andrew, Bryce, listen. I know they just got married. I could think what I would appreciate. If you don't mind, I'm going to call a meeting, an emergency meeting of Monopoly that will be 30 minutes long, and we can only have four players. I nominate the four of us to go play Monopoly up in the very tightest front cabin, and then we'll make a ship-wide announcement.
They need the whole ship?
You know what? I don't know what they're going to do. I'm just saying that the four of us need to spend 30 minutes playing Monopoly at zero gravity up in the very frontmost. You know what? I'm just going to put this blanket up here. Let me duct tape all this. And then, who likes to play loud Monopoly?
Oh, yeah, we'll have to play loud music too. Huh?
Correct. Oh, right? Constantly shouting and
that's
talking.
Like a fun game.
Right. I would initiate that. And I don't care if what they did, but I got to believe that everybody knows that they're making history.
Sure. I think that, like, I'm looking through the site, like, going, like, man, this has got to be like one of those hoax sites for some movie or something like that. And
sorry, what site are you on?
This is the Space Life Origin, the ones that originally the starting point for this discussion.
Right. Oh, got it. Yeah,
you know about the whole. It's like I have no problem. The idea that eventually, because you think about like the first kid born on Mars, the first thing is like, yeah, but like, I'm going in my head, like, I don't want to be one of these people that's like, oh, it's too soon. But I'm like, no, yeah, this is too soon. We haven't even figured out how to like, you know, put people in a space on a regular basis without throwing up, you know. And then the idea they have this thing like, oh, the safest way we can preserve human life and cells is the space arc. We'll put these things in a little capsule that orbs at 300 miles and up. Yeah, that sounds great. Who's supposed to retrieve this?
Well, apparently they're putting some of these on Earth too, I believe.
Yeah. Well, you know, I know where my money's on.
All right. Mark Lee and Jan Davis were the first and only married couple to fly together in space. They flew aboard the Space Shuttle Endeavour in 1992. Lee and Davis met during training for the flight. So they just met when they were training. Secretly married shortly before liftoff, and once they disclosed their marriage to NASA, it was too late to train a substitute. NASA has since changed its policies to forbid married couples from flying together.
I would imagine those are the actions of people who had no intention of having sex in space.
They did it.
Oh, look at those grins. Look at those grins. Those are the grins that only come from people who had the first SpaceX. They were the original SpaceX.
Here, I think I'm sending Bryce I think some actual photos of this. Hold on.
Oh, I love the fact that there was so much high-minded back and forth on what is and isn't probable, and then all we had to see was the grins on their faces to know that it was a settled issue. Daniel J. Newman says, because only married people have sex, right? Yeah, no. Our point is that maybe there were pioneers before them, but by virtue of having gotten secretly married, they kept the window open to eventually admit it publicly in a way that does that would not reflect poorly on NASA because they were married, which was a smart move.
That's really my only question, Brian, was whether or not there had been any kind of confirmation or anybody had hinted or winked.
No, like, nobody has done so, to the best of my knowledge. It's just, it's all by implication, but very strong implication.
Yeah, and it's the kind of thing, too, that, like, if they did it, they're not really, you know, in a position to sort of say this. Because if they come out right and say, hey, we did this, and there's, because NASA, like, you know, you'd still be involved with the program, still involved with this, you know. Well,
think about the amount of investment they put into the NASA space program. You don't do that kind of thing unless you really believe in their mission and you want them to do well. And you know for a fact that by speaking the words, yeah, we went up and space boned, you're going to do damage to this institution that you have invested so much of your own career and believe in the mission of. Like I mean, of course, you there'd be no benefit to that.
Yeah. So it'd just be kind of a wink, wink. You know. So, Bryce, you get the photo?
I mean, I got this Jezebel article. Which is, I believe.
Remember Moonraker? Nobody does it better.
guys, well, I'll tell you what. This is sad. Markley and Jan Davis divorced in 2006.
Oh.
Tell Bonnie, you know, time to get into the program.
What?
Well, I mean, now we'll never know, right? Because, like, if they're both remarried, like, who wants that? Who wants to dump that on your, like, current spouse about, like, hey, like, it's one thing. It's complicated enough when people have to discuss their old relationships, let alone the one where it's like, oh, yeah, we got secretly married and we banged in space.
Yeah. Although that's the kind of conversation you have in your early flirting days before you're really dating somebody seriously, because, like, oh, hey, a casual person of my interested, or whatever person I'm interested in, here's a fun tidbit about me. I did this, like, you know, you drop that early on, and then later on.
No, but she can't. No, this is like a state secret. Like, no. She can't just put it in her. She can't put it in her Tinder profile.
Well, no, you wouldn't advertise it, but that's pretty good second date material if you want to be interesting to the other party. You don't publicly engrave it or nothing, but it's like, man, I'm going to put those odds as pretty low. If they did pull off that heist, the odds that on a following date, neither of them shared that with their partner or partner-to-be or the person they were courting, I would say are pretty low. That's one I'd just get out there in Front Street. Really?
Man, you know, the best part of the story would be if, like, 9 months later she had a baby.
Did she have a baby 9 months later? No, oh, okay. That would be, this is weird things.
That would be like... do we want to jump into picks?
Yeah,
sure.
I got a pick. I'm really excited about it. It's a Netflix original. It's called Bodyguard, and it's great. It's a BBC production. The first 20 minutes are one of the most suspenseful, exciting things I've seen in a hot minute. I really, really dug it. And, they seem to be, I'm only two episodes in. They seem to be masterful at, creating this tantric, tension, throughout the entire thing, various types of tension ranging from, you know, action tension to sexual tension to,
all this other stuff. I'm really, really digging it. I watched the first two episodes while we were on the road, one on the flight out, one on the flight back, and ended up rewatching the first two episodes just to seduce Bonnie into getting into the series as well. I'm liking it quite a bit.
You want to give people the elevator pitch about what it's actually about?
Okay. So basically, a PTSD war vet, who is, and they do a really great job of representing what it's like to be constantly on guard. He gets assigned to protect, one of the ministers, this is in England,
the Home Secretary,
the Home Secretary, who is responsible for sending him, and underfunding him, basically everything wrong in his life. He's now protecting the person who could be credibly called directly responsible for all of it. And, you know, he's super badass. It's great. I like it. Cool.
My pick is going to be Doctor Who. There is a new a regime in charge of the venerable franchise. They have replaced the Doctor. I have not watched the most recent episode. And I have some more kind of complicated feelings about it. I liked the first two episodes more than I liked the jaunt into modern or American history with Rosa Parks. But I do enjoy the fact that the show again sort of feels like a science fiction series and not as floppy and goofy as Stephen Moffat kind of took it. But I'm excited that the episode that aired this weekend was apparently more of a kind of creature feature sort of episode, which I'm excited to see how they handle that. But it feels a little bit more grounded, which is something that I think the series was desperately, desperately in need of. So, Doctor Who.
Shall I get back in?
I don't know if I'm willing to give it the Andrew recommendation yet. I think the Rosa Parks episode would probably drive you up a wall because it drove me up a wall. But I think even then it was fairly like the plotting has been fairly straightforward, where for the historical preachiness of where they wanted to take the Rosa Parks episode aside, because it's always good to have the British explain, you know, American history to us. It was a very simple plot where it wasn't about, I think Moffat's stories tended to lead to like, oh, well, we have to find the magic amulet, which mixes with the magic water. And if, oh, no, there's not enough magic particles in the water, so we need to stir it with the magic walking stick that was in the old man's hands the whole time. It's mm-hmm. like it was just a lot of gobbledygook. Whereas even in, you know, some of the elements of the Rosa Parks episode kind of drove me up a wall. The plot was we have to keep history the same. And so now it's a very simple idea. All these things need to happen the same way that they would normally happen, or else our heroes fail. And so it's like for a show that can go anywhere like Doctor Who, I think that's always the challenge is how do we keep it grounded? How do we let the story breathe because we understand what the restrictions are in a world where you're always one gobbledyflip away from totally rewriting everything that you've set up. So I've enjoyed the fact that they've tried to keep things a little bit more grounded.
Bryce?
I got a chance to spend about 2 hours or so last night with a new game from Lucas Pope. You guys probably don't know Lucas Pope by name, but you certainly know Papers, Please.
Oh, yeah.
He is the guy who made that. He has got a new game out called Return of the Obra Dinn. It is a game that you play an insurance adjuster in 1807, and you board what was thought to be a lost at ship sea, the Obra Dinn, and your job is to investigate the ship and determine who all the various members of the manifest were and how they died and who or what killed them. And it's really an interesting way to tell a narrative and to show a logic puzzle game. It tells you up front, like, hey, sometimes you may have to guess, and sometimes you may have to determine who people are by elimination. But the idea is you board this ship and you find corpses and you have the death pocket watch. It's a kind of a weird, just unexplained thing. But when you find a corpse or you find information about a corpse, you flash back to the moment that that person died. And so you are able to sort of traverse these different parts of the ship in history, and you'll see who else was around that person and what it looked like when that person died. And you use all of that logic stuff, and you get to hear a little bit of conversation before it happens, and you get to see, who's, so they got stabbed, who's stabbing them and stuff, to like make a really solid logic like mystery. It's really cool. And the other cool thing that I'm sure a lot of people notice is it's in this like one bit dithered style,
mm-hmm.
and they have
reminiscent of the old Macintoshes.
Yeah, well, and they have multiple mm-hmm. options. So this the default one is the Macintosh flavor, but they have like an IBM and an television.
Do they have like CGA version. or EGA?
I think so. There are quite a few of them, and you have a lot of options in terms of if you want it to be hard pixels or smoothed, and how scaled you want it. They have a bunch of different. Two-tone palette, so
that's cool.
It looks really gorgeous. There are a lot of really good visual effects that happen. So like when you're in these flashbacks, you see the models of these different characters, but it's hard to tell who any one character is. So you get this book that has illustrations of the whole manifest, and so when you zoom in on a character, they like isolate the body out from the scene, and the illustration appears like in the background, and it looks so smooth and neat that it almost looks like a historical television show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, this is the person, and then you see the illustration of them. And it's little stuff that like that that makes you feel like, oh yeah, I actually am probably doing the work that a historian might do, using, you know, very small amounts of evidence to try to figure out, you know, the situations. And I'll tell you what, the Obra Dinn goes some places, so...
Awesome.
I love the sort of era we're in with things like Steam and et cetera that make it easier for indie game developers to get their stuff out there and in front of people very quick, like the App Store, you know, just yeah. very easily out there. And the obscure ideas for games like you're an insurance, and you know, I'm excited because, you know, I want to do my story of somebody working in the Boston Custom House in 1853 examining wool ledgers and pricing disparities.
Mm-hmm.
I think now's the time for that.
Yeah. I mean, it's not just... You joke, but that's not far off. I mean, I remember on the Apple IIe playing, it wasn't Pirates. It was some trader game mm-hmm. that eventually got reskinned as like drug seller or whatever. But, you know, you go to different places. You
Lemonade Wars.
Yeah. You buy a commodity, you sell it somewhere else. Sometimes you get in a fight. You know, it's great.
Have you seen the longevity of Oregon Trail?
Oh yeah, oh,
right.
Yeah, there's like something universal
now. I got like Choose Your Own Adventure, Oregon Trail books and stuff. Like, just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I got something to show you.
Okay. Go
show us.
I'd been hoping that something like this would happen for a long time, and then it finally happened. And you know, I like pop-up books, right?
Oh yeah,
yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
My favorite designer of pop-up books is Matthew Reinhardt, who's amazing. He's just elevated the art in an amazing way. And you know, I could go on about, you take something that not a lot of people try to be good at, and I think his are the best in the world. I have not encountered pop-ups. Every now and then you'll see something in some imagination. His are amazing. Well, Reinhardt had a couple pop-up books come out recently. And the one I'd always hoped for, I always wished there was a really good Harry Potter pop-up book. There have been a couple pop-up books. Nothing that was really, I thought, anywhere close to his quality. But finally, we have
a pop-up by Matthew Reinhardt.
Remember the Game of Thrones one that opens up? This does that.
Oh, Jesus.
So you first, for audio listeners, imagine I just popped open. Hold on.
So, something so big it doesn't even fit on camera.
Right? It's the entire like external view of Hogwarts, the castle.
Yep. And then you can like open up their like windows and stuff that open up. You've
got, that's cute.
You've got Reinhardt, typical Reinhardt fashion. You've got all these different pop-ups. This is really my. I'm going to start a new podcast. Me talking about pop-up books, by the way, because it's so fulfilling. So you've got amazing stuff here that just comes open. Wow.
And so basically, for the audio listeners, in each corner there is a little like exploded view of moments that happened outside Hogwarts.
Yeah, or inside whatever. I mean, it's like every page.
Yeah, just in the page that we were looking at that Andrew was showing, and now it's the Quidditch pitch.
So those are the main ones. So this is kind of cool that it does this, that it pops open, and he's done some very imaginative stuff. All right, for Dark Forest. Now, what's great, like the Game of Thrones one that he does, you undo the spine, and the whole thing unfolds into Hogwarts, the entire grounds of Hogwarts. So the whole what this means is that you undo the back of the book, and then all the individual pages that you saw now spread out flat like a map, like a three-dimensional map of Hogwarts.
Wow,
very cool.
That's awesome.
The Game of Thrones one is still my favorite, but this is really good. I've got another one I'll show you next week. He's got a couple other. I got a Walking Dead that he didn't do that was actually pretty good. So
cool.
It's my pick, the Matthew Reinhardt Hogwarts guide.
That's awesome. I love those books. And man, Harry Potter, that universe, everybody loves it so much. I really wish that they were able to continue to make good things.
Yeah. I wish they had a good new series. Yeah. All right. It's been weird.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.